Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story is Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes, indeed. And we're back. We didn't get enough. We need more Kristen Lavransdatter. This is book two. It's normally packaged in one book nowadays, right? In the big 1,100 pager. But we read the middle 400 pages, and it's called The Wife. The first one, a couple of episodes ago, we talked about the first part, which is called The Wreath. And The Wreath shows up right away in this one. Right away. Yeah. So again, if you didn't listen to that one, Kristen Lavransdatter is written by Sigrid Undset, and it was written in the 1920s, the early 20s, and it is about Kristen Lavransdatter, who is a fictitious Norwegian woman in, I think, the 14th century. Is that right?
1300s. So. Yeah. Medieval times. Yeah.
Right. So we're going through her life, and she is living it. She is living a life.
Well, so. She's certainly all over the place with it.
Yes.
Living the life.
Oh, so yeah. So in the last one, you know, I think we first met her when she was like 7 or something. Mm-hmm. And then now she's married. I'm not clear how old she is at the end of this, but I feel like it's 30s. I guess I'm not positive.
And I think in the last book I misspoke and I thought she was younger than she was, but I think she's 19 when she gets married.
Okay.
And by the end of the book, she has 7 sons. So she's at least 30 and maybe
at a pretty good 40. Clip too, at least those first several.
Yeah.
She was doing one a year or having, you know, giving birth once a year, and she had twins. And but then the pace slowed down. She wasn't having one every year there towards the end, but yeah, 7 sons. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot. And it's interesting because, you know, her parents lost so many kids. But she's
hers
got,
all healthy.
Her sons are all kicking, you know? It wasn't uncommon, I guess, back then just to lose a kid, you know? It's like all kinds of things could happen. But there is a lot of, you know, death in this book. A lot of people losing their lives, you know, not in battles and stuff, you know, sickness and little old age
old
in this
age.
One.
Yeah. Right.
And the old age was 50s for our man. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's so. Because when Lawrence dies, maybe he was just in his 50s.
Yeah,
or
I
60.
Remember he said he was 51.
Okay.
And that's when he started having his trouble.
Okay.
And then it was some years after that he passed away, but it didn't seem like 10, you know, it seemed less than 10. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah. But yeah, how do we proceed here? Because we've talked about it once already. Do we summarize this like we usually do, or do we just kind of get into it?
I think, to me, the summary is, I was talking to somebody about it today and kind of trying to describe what I was feeling again is the real genius of this author. She's basically taking the various stages of life and showing now these two people going through it, Kristen and her husband Erland, and showing how easy it is to develop into these typical patterns of behavior, right, that husbands and wives develop. And how they don't talk to each other, so they don't understand each other. And of course, each couple does it in their particular way. So Kristen and Erland do it in their particular way. And calling it the wife is good, because that is what Kristen is. But I didn't remember we saw so much of what Erland is thinking also.
Hmm.
And so because we're shown both couples' struggles with how life is going and their own particular personalities and their tendencies or the way they're drawn towards their particular sins because they are who they are and who they are together. This is just an amazing picture, I think, of married life.
Yeah.
As well as continuing the adventure of what is Erland, what is his place like, and how is he among other people, and, you know, political intrigue and stuff like that. And don't you think, I mean, it's a terrible summary in terms of making you interested, but it's really what she's doing with this book.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. At least this part of it, you know, we'll see what happens next. But what you're saying is she's following Kristen through these stages of life and talking about the stages of life. So what's the next part called? Next part, the cross. Interesting. Okay. So there we go. I'm interested in that very much. It's like, you know, we haven't hit that already. Okay. All right. Let's see what we got.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. Cause Kristen, you know, she's had a difficult time of it, you know, much due to decisions of her own. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I mean, marrying Erland at all, getting involved with Erland at all in the previous book, how she got involved with him and what she rejected to be involved with him are things that we're bringing into this one. And now they're married and she's pregnant. But she got pregnant a little too early, right? You know, mm-hmm. And then people are going to know, because the baby's going to be born, you know, but I don't know. Early. I can't remember how many. Yeah. Earlier than 9 months after marriage.
Yeah.
So she's deathly worried of how that's going to affect her baby. You know, she's thinking physical effects, even that, you know, sin could actually physically alter the kid, you know, and she just thinks so much, you know, and throughout this whole book, there's large sections of her just really tying herself up in knots and worry about sins that she's committed and how that's affecting everything.
And she sees, like you say, the possibility of the baby not being normal when it's born. She sees as the direct effect of, you know, the sins of the parents are visited on the children.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we would say, of course, in Christ, and I think she's told that, you know, that's not how it works.
Right.
But that doesn't mean she's not worried about it. We all have our various beliefs that we're told and worries and everything.
Yep.
And she is interesting because she goes through these periods of going back and forth. Like you say, we're shown large blocks of how she thinks, where she's like, oh no, my sin. Oh no, no. And she's repentant. And then she turns right around and does other things. You're just like, Kristen.
Yeah. Come on.
Do you remember the stuff you were thinking about the sin before? This is just another manifestation of it. But I think that's why I admire it, because hopefully ours aren't as big as mm-hmm. hers in terms of how it affects people, but it kind of always is, right?
Right.
So it's very realistic in that way. We all kind of go, oh no, I now see my sin. It's before me and I won't do this again. And of course you either do it again or do some other variation of things again.
Mm. Yeah.
But.
Yeah. But and right. And she married her husband, who to me, you know, sex is the main thing for him. He's just mm-hmm. like, I'm thinking about this all the time. You know, there's even times where, you know, she's not feeling well, you know, she's taking a long time to recover from a kid or something. And, you know, it seems like he kind of wants to get close to her in that way. And then he says, oh, I think maybe you're too tired, you know, and, you know, but even, you know, at least he seems to back off at that point. Right. But it's mm-hmm. just, you know, that just seems to be this thing. So it's really, he's like this box of instincts, and that's the way he lives his life too. It's not only with sex, but it's also kind of how he's moving around in the world. And it turns out that that's kind of a good thing to have when you're going to battle and stuff. Right. You know, so he's kind of good at that, you know, and he gets a little reputation, but he's not good at managing the estate or making decisions, you know, that are reasoned or where you're thinking of the future or things like that. He seems to be messing all that up, you know? So,
yeah.
And Kristen is dealing with all of that, this impulsivity that he has.
Right. And I kind of think a lot of what we're seeing from him, what we're seeing from him is kind of an exaggeration in terms of men and women's failure to communicate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I think men do instinctively want a more physical relationship. This is how they express themselves.
Sure.
It's how Erland is amongst the men. And he's, you know, here, I'm brave. I'm doing this and this and this. And the men go, yeah, you are. Here we go. And with her, he's always been physical. It's never been an intellectual meeting of the minds or anything else. They both have always reacted to each other very physically. And so when she's not able to do it, and also she's trying to be more holy, he doesn't know exactly how to approach her anymore.
Yeah.
And he also is not really good at noticing or thinking about the things that she might be struggling with. So when the book opens up and they've gone to his estate and she's very homesick, the place is horribly maintained, which is to say not at all. So she starts getting it in order and dealing with the servants and everything. And I loved the way she was using her parents' techniques where they said, like, you know, if a servant's not doing what they're supposed to, instead of yelling, she would do what she'd always heard her father do, which is go, oh, maybe you didn't understand. Let's do it together and I'll show you. You know, and so because of her ways of managing things that she learned from her parents' place, she's able to bring around the good ones. The bad ones either leave or get better. But she is going to have her first baby. She's horribly homesick. She doesn't have any other woman to advise her. And Erland notices nothing of this.
Yeah.
And I will say that in my experience, this isn't that unusual because men and women just notice different things a lot of the time. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Woman would know. Yeah, she goes out for this long walk where she's almost beside herself with loneliness and everything. She winds up at a farmhouse where the farm wife is just so nice and understands her and is giving her something to eat. And it's Kristen's first time of being around a sympathetic woman who's more like she is in the whole time she's been there. And she's unburdening herself and relaxing and telling stories. And this housewife's like, oh, she's so lonely. But see, Erland is doing his own thing, you know. And later on, after this, we notice that because of her good example, he starts getting his estate in order. You know, he starts fixing fences and barns, and he has to slaughter some livestock, but it's so that the other livestock has enough to eat, and he's taking care of people more properly. And all the tenants and people who live on the land that he holds in the towns and whatever, they all love it. He's being the kind of person they want him to be. And so on the outside, it's mostly looking good, but it's when you hear what they're thinking on the inside, as you said, or when they're unburdening themselves to people. And so I liked seeing all that because it's them. It's kind of the story of every married couple because you know, of course, this is writ large, but when you go off and you suddenly are like, oh, it's just you and me, and now how do we communicate with each other now that we're in real life? How do we do things? How do we blend our styles of living? It's just all the stuff that we do understand ourselves, but in this other setting, it opens the door because they're extremely faith-based. You know, they think about God a lot, even if they're not always acting the way they should. So both of them, when they're thinking about it or talking to people about it, especially once Erland's brother Gunnulf comes on the scene.
Yeah, that's what I was going to mention too. Because he's super interesting because he's kind of, he's like what Kristen needs. Kristen. Right, is what Kristen needs. It's like, he becomes like a spiritual person to her, like talking to that half or the intellectual, spiritual, what she doesn't get from Erland. And then Erland is like the physical. And, you know, it works, you know, it's really interesting, you know, but I liked Gunnulf. I thought he was really interesting. And, you know, how he would talk to her and tell her, you know, you're worrying so much about this sin, but, you know, he's the one who suggested, hey, you should go on a little pilgrimage. He could see that she needed to do something more than, you know, she needed to feel forgiven. And, you know, this idea, yeah, you should go and offer your wreath and go on this pilgrimage. I think you need to do that, you know. And Erland would never have said that, right? It's not something he would have ever concluded. But, you know, it was good for her to do that, and she did, you know.
Well, and he counsels Erland, too, although they have a different relationship, of course, because they're brothers, so they have other things going on. But he says at one point, he's like, do you not notice what Kristen's going through? Mm. And it never occurred to Erland to think about the things that Gunnulf was bringing up. He's just not the guy who thinks about that stuff.
Yeah.
And once Gunnulf brings it up, he does start noticing things. And later on, Gunnulf says, kind of is thinking he really lost respect for his brother when he saw how carelessly he treated his young wife. He wasn't thinking about, you know, was she comfortable? Was she lonely? Was, you know, she's going to have the baby. That's her first baby. And I think Gunnulf is there, right?
Yeah,
and
he's right there. Yeah, he baptizes her.
Where's her mother? Me. Why didn't she send for her mother? Where's this other stuff? She said she didn't need it. And he goes, she's never had a baby. And I was like, well, but she said. And I thought, to me, that was the thing of going, she said that because she wanted you to say, no, 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 I'm going to get these people and take care of you.
Yeah.
But you heard her saying, I don't need it. And that's all you understood.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yeah. And Gunnulf was there, you know, when the baby was born and baptized him immediately, which was cool, you know, and he said, yep, I took care of that. So the boy's been baptized after all, he says, you know, and then she, you know, she's been so racked with worry over this kid, you know, obviously there's the fear of having the baby, you know, which again, never having been in that situation, I think all women feel, right? It's, there's this like, what is this going to really be like?
Yeah, and, true.
Yeah. So then, but in, she's got this additional, you know, oh, that, you know, I don't deserve this and I've affected this boy with my sin. And, you know, she's just, you know, consumed with that kind of thought. And Gunnulf, you know, tries to calm her and tell her that that's not how this goes. And, yeah, but I loved it. You know, she's, I highlighted this thing, you know, let's see, a newly baptized child was just as holy as all the holy angels in heaven. Cause Gunnulf just told her the boy has been baptized. Right. Cause he said, you know, I just did that, you know? And then, she says the sins of the parents were washed from the child. And he had not yet committed any sins of his own. Fearful and cautious, she kissed the little face, you know. And he's, you know, he doesn't, he's whole and everything, you know. Nothing that what she was concerned about came to pass. And, you know, this is nice little baby boy.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
And I love the pilgrimage she goes on. She's barefoot and she carries the baby with her because he's got to nurse. And also she's taking the baby because this is part of her sin, even though he's innocent.
Yeah.
He's the result of her sin, or the fruit of sin, as this section is called. And I liked when she gets to the church and she's walking through and it has all these pillars and it says she's walking as if it were a forest.
Yeah,
you know? That was neat. And that description is really neat. But then while she's there and Christ on the cross is above them, and it says, here knelt Kristen with the fruit of her sin in her arms. She hugged the child tight. He was as fresh as an apple, pink and white like a rose. He was awake now, and he lay there looking up at her with his clear, sweet eyes, conceived in sin, carried under her hard, evil heart. And I love how they always say the baby are carried under their heart. That's just such a wonderful way to put it. And it says, pulled out of her sin-tainted body, so pure, so healthy, so inexpressibly lovely and fresh and innocent, this undeserved beneficence broke her heart in two. Crushed with remorse, she lay there with tears welling up out of her soul like blood from a mortal wound. And she then stops, and God makes it really clear to her through all this time she's there praying and weeping in penitence. It's, you can hear the dialogue that is being said where he's like, basically, have you forgotten this, Kristen? Where are the deeds that should bear witness for you on the last day? Showing that you were a link in God's church, the good deeds which will bear witness to you that you belong to God. Jesus, her good deeds. She had repeated the prayers that were placed on her lips. She had given out the alms that her father had placed in her hands. She had helped her mother when Ragnfrid clothed the poor, fed the hungry, and tended to the sores of the ill. But the evil deeds were her own. She had clung to everyone who offered her protection and support. Brother Edvin's loving admonitions, his sorrow over her sin, his tender intercessory prayers, which she had received. And then she had flung herself into passionate, sinful desire as soon as she was beyond the light of his gentle old steps. And she talks about how she's betrayed all these different people who did nothing but be good and want the best for her. Just because she did just what she wanted.
Yeah.
And it says, like a wild heathen animal, she had reared up at the first chastisement. And she's thinking now of Erland and how she's been treating him since they've been married. And she says, Erland, not for a moment did she ever believe he no longer loved her. If she had believed that, then she would not have had the strength to live. Oh, no. But she'd secretly thought that when she was beautiful again and healthy and lively, then she would act in such a way that he would have to beg her. So, and she's talking about how she had rejected him all winter long. And so at the end of all this thinking, and it's phrased as a sentence in quote marks, now do you understand, Kristen, that you need help? Yes, my Lord and King, now I understand. I am in great need of your support so that I won't turn away from God again. Stay with me. And I like this, you who are the chieftain of his people, as I step forward with my prayers, pray for mercy for me. And she's turning to Olav, their patron saint. But I was pulling bits out of a longer section, but it's that sequence of realizing what your sins have done, how you have been shown and taught how to be good, and how the minute you get a chance, you do just what you want to do, and you don't care about anybody else.
Yeah.
And then you can see how it keeps going with the way she's been treating Erland because she's mad at him.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I just thought it, and that happens over and over in this book. I hadn't remembered how much it happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And from Erland's perspective too. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cause he does the same thing when he's upset with her and feeling that way. In fact, there's a part where he goes to another woman even, you know, that it's acting similarly. But that's a tough deal. But yeah, I mean, I've been there too, where you're doing stuff that you don't care what other people think, or you're not thinking about it, at least. You're shoving it away, not considering it.
Yeah.
So,
want what you want.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to worry about
something
else.
Absolutely.
Because that's the common human condition.
Yes, absolutely. That is us.
And even brother, is it brother or father Gunolf?
I think it's father. Yep.
Father. Even he's got a section where he's been counseling Kristen and then stops and says, but my sin is that I want everyone to love me. So I do this because I want to show I'm better than my brother, who's the father of this child. And I think he's neglecting the child. So I'll do this. I'll step in and do this, you know. And I thought, oh, it's interesting because we're getting insight into someone else's perspective who's not part of this couple in that way.
Yeah. Right. And Erland has, you know, because she does say one thing that you're both so different, but you're also the same.
Uh-huh.
And in that way, I think they are the same. I think that's the way they're the same.
Yeah.
You know, Erland wants to be loved too. You know, he wants everybody to think he's great. You know, so, I mean, it's a character trait they share, but yeah, they're both very different people.
Well, and I think too, I like the way the story goes along so that, there's a political situation where there's a young prince, I guess, or young king, and then someone else is the older king who wants to take over.
Yeah. No, well, it's king. The younger king is going to be king, but he's too young to actually rule. So there's, you know, a jockeying for position of who's going to actually be doing that. And then, you know, when the person is getting older as time moves on, You know, he's just got people against him, you know. They were saying specifically there was a sin that he committed. I can't remember what it was.
I think it was the way he was bringing in Norwegian thinking and law into Sweden. And so he was doing things that were harsher and not really prescribed by Swedish law. Because I think he was raised in Norway or lived there for a long time. And he wasn't getting permission from anyone to change the law. So when Erland winds up, he's on the side of the young king. There's kind of a conspiracy to see if they can put the young king in place where he should be. And he would then put the good laws into place, they hope. Yeah. And Erland's character is shown further or deeper when he's undergoing imprisonment and torture.
Yeah, and again, I feel like that's Erland. He's just not good at that stuff, right? He's like, you know, that requires thought, preparation, planning, consideration of what consequences are and everything. And he just doesn't seem to have that, you know. He's really good at the impulsivity thing, you know, like in battle.
Yeah.
He can fight. and he seems to be good at that, you know, reacting to situations that are now. But he's not good in his marriage or in this act, you know, of figuring out what the consequences are going to be and actually considering them and making a good plan, you know.
Yeah, I think it never occurs to him. Yeah, he never thinks far ahead.
Right.
And it never occurs to him to think maybe he might lose.
Yeah.
He's never like, but if I do lose, no, he's just, you know, going along, doing his thing.
Yeah.
And it's what people love about him. It's what makes him a natural leader in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to find, there was a quote somewhere, and maybe we don't need it, but it was talking, Simon then comes back in the scene, and we've skipped ahead some, but Simon comes back in to help Kristen when Erland has been in prison, because Kristen's like, yeah, I got to be there for Erland. And so she leaves her children. This is where I was like, the first time I read the book, I was like, you're the worst mother in the world, frankly.
Yeah, she leaves her kid.
Well, yeah. And also we've seen throughout the book, she's not raising them carefully. Neither of them are. I mean,
Lovren's even points that out.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she takes care of them. She loves them to death, but she does not discipline them properly. And Erland doesn't discipline them properly. So we see it, as you say, when they go to visit her parents, these kids are just monsters, running around, never behave, all the things. And that's when you go, oh, she's a terrible mother.
Yeah, yeah.
From her point of view, she loves them so much, but that's not the right thing to do necessarily for them. And then she's going off to leave them, one of them a tiny baby. And I understand the idea that she needs to help. But when I look at this book, especially reading a second time, I'm like, that's not why she's going. She's going because she loves Erland so much she can't bear to be away from him. And if her being there will help him get through this, that's what she's going to do. And I'm like, but the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
The kids are what matter here. And so obviously from my point of view, maybe it was called The Wife, and that's right, because she is wife first and foremost. My book might be called The Mother. I mean, I am a wife also.
Right.
But I would do anything to have everything okay for my kids.
Right.
When they're that little.
Yeah. Good point. So good point.
If Tom got himself into that trouble, I'd say, wow. And when people explain to me, here's the kind of man that Erland is, and you saw a new reason to respect him because he could be that leader, and he could put up with torture cheerfully and gently. He could be imprisoned and not let it bother him. And I was impressed by that part of his character, as Simon is.
Yes.
But I would say, this is man's work. I'm here taking care of the kids. Simon, you go help. Now, I say that, and maybe I'd be the one who's at the prison door every day going, let me see him again.
Yeah.
But just intellectually, I just looked at this, and as a woman, I just went, Kristen. Yeah. And plus the way she would snipe at Erland when she was so mad and bring up old history and be mean to him. And I mean, he shouldn't have gone to that woman, but she had her own part in the problems with the relationship that made him even open to that. And I'm not blaming her at all. I'm just saying each of us does stuff that affects the other person.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
Yeah, I think, you know, and Lavrans and Simon and Erland make an interesting comparison too.
Don't they though?
But it's like through Lavrans's eyes, we see Simon and Erland and how he really respects Simon and really keeps Erland at arm's length. You know, he's in the group. You know, there was one point where they said something like Erland, the way he spoke to Lavrans was more of a formal way. Mm-hmm. And Simon was talking to him like a peer.
Mm-hmm.
And Kristen was noticing this and she was resenting it a little bit. Oh, more than a little bit. She was really resenting it, you know. So it's like, why are you treating Simon that way? You know, and of course she has all the mixed up feelings about Simon, you know, and as Simon has for her. So, but you know, just again, you know, part of the whole history, her whole history that she's carrying around with her, always like at the tip of her mind, you know, and that's a hard thing to walk around with all the time. You know, she shouldn't seem to put any of that down.
And I'd kind of forgotten that part because when she was betrothed to Simon in the previous book, and Simon and her father would get along really well, and they both really liked each other so much. She would be jealous that her father liked Simon the way he did.
Yeah, she did.
And then in this book, when Lavrans is dying, and Rungfrid is, just there with him, sitting by the bed, and they'll talk or have a little joke or do whatever. And she's looking at this going, I never thought about them loving each other.
I really liked that, you know. It was like the Lavrans and Rungfrid cleared the air, cleared everything between them before he passed away, and it was beautiful. And again, that's like confession, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's like our relationship with God, having something in between that we can't get around. You know, if we have something there, it's like, you know, when you lie to a person, and that lie exists. And you talk to them, that lie is in your head. Whether you're thinking about it right now or not, your relationship is not 100% open. Right. There's a part of you that is being withheld. And then, so when we go to confession, we try to clear that so that there is nothing between us anymore. And we can be open now. And we can be real now, you know?
Yeah,
and that's 100%. What they did with each other. It was like, it was beautiful.
I loved it.
It was beautiful. It was like, you know, and they, you know, it was like the end of their life. They love each other more than they ever have. And everything was out. And there was no more secrets.
Yes.
No more things to worry about. No more, you know, what if you found this out about me? You know, that was all gone.
They could just ignore it and live in the now or whatever was their relationship.
And Kristen noticed it. She noticed at his deathbed how they were with each other. And she was like, boy, I've really... Because, she said, like you were saying, you know, she said something about, you know, she never really considered that they really loved each other. You know what I mean? It wasn't something that she thought about.
And she had to struggle not to be jealous of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because she was used to always having all her father's love that she could see.
Right. Right.
So what we're seeing from all these various situations is... her continued, and she'll express this in different ways when she's feeling penitent or fighting it or whatever, but it's, you know, everything has to be about her.
Hmm. Yeah, and what she wants, right?
Yeah, and it's like, I guess it's kind of like, what are your loves? And Kristen wants everybody to love her. Gunnulf wants everybody to love him. But and we all do, but it's what way is it, and what are we allowing people to...
Yeah.
Feel it's, free
it's
on.
Like, how high up the mountain is that? You know?
Yeah.
Right? If God's not on the top of the mountain, then it's disordered, right? But if that becomes the top of your mountain where I'll do anything so that people will love me, now you're in a dangerous spot.
Right.
But you want it farther down the mountain. I think everybody wants to be liked.
Right. Of
course. Know, so, but it needs to, you know, there are certain things I would not do to be liked, you know?
Yeah, and it has to be balanced. And I was pleased to see when that she would like fight within herself to not let that bother her about her mother and father.
Yeah.
But then, and so you mentioned Simon, because Simon was so impressive when he was going to Erland's rescue and Kristen's help.
Mm-hmm.
He was just doing everything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you see at the very end, he's still in love with Kristen. I mean, you know it a little before that, but
the culmination is. He marries her sister, which has got to be a weird situation, you know? So he's like, I'm marrying her because she's kind of like the one I really love. And this will work out fine. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what's coming, but it feels like that's gonna come up.
Well, he's doing the best he can, really, mm-hmm. and yes, I admire that. And his best is very competent indeed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that he finds things to admire in Erland while Erland is going through this is also praiseworthy, although he's surprised by it, because Erland hasn't shown this part of his personality to somebody like Simon.
Mm.
He's more like Lavrance.
Yeah.
More internal, a little more thinking man, kind of.
Yeah.
Although it gets pointed out that at one point, it's Sir Erling who's pointing out to Erland, I think, do you not understand the kind of man that Lavrance is? That gets brought up again.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
When he speaks, people listen.
Yeah, he is the man. I sure do like Lavrance.
Yeah.
He's my favorite.
I really like him.
I really, really liked him, you know, and he ends up, he keeps having these little heart attacks and, you know, he knows, he knows he's at the end and he's, you know, it's cool that he was like taking care of business. You know, he was like, I have things to make right, you know, and he would talk to his wife and he talked to Kristen, you know, he gave a ring to her, to Kristen.
Yeah.
So he was like, you know, and everybody knew what he was saying, you know, it was killing him, but it was just like, you know, it's killing them that to hear this, you know, because Kristen knew exactly what was happening. You know, she, I'm not sure I'm going to see him again. She did see him one more time, but you know, I'm not sure I'm going to see him again. And this is what he's telling me right now. That scene where, you know, he's riding away and she, you know, really can't, she's just crying. He's like, please don't.
Oh yeah.
Please don't. It was good. Great scene.
Yeah.
Yep.
It was. And I was thinking of when he's in bed and he's going to die very soon. And she is there and she had the baby while she was there. Right.
Mm-hmm.
For however long. And, he's talking to her about, I was maybe supposed to be a priest, but I chose the world instead. I loved the world so much. And I thought, this is so interesting because Kristen also thought about the convent, but she knew she couldn't do it. She chose the world. But how both of them live their lives in the world is so different.
Yeah.
And Kristen, of course, is still working through hers, and Lavrance is older. But when you hear about Lavrance's past, he's always just gentle and mild, and you know, whatever problems he has aren't great big splashed out there for everyone to see, more like Kristen's are. And then I liked when they talked about him looking forward to purgatory as a test of his manhood. It says, Lavrance now spoke often of the purgatory fire, which he expected to enter soon, but he showed no sign of fear. He hoped for great solace from the prayers of intercession offered by his friends and the priests, and he consoled himself that St. Olav and St. Thomas would give him strength for the last trial, as he felt they had given him strength here in life. He had always heard that the person who firmly believed would never for a moment lose sight of the salvation toward which the soul was moving through the fiery blaze. Kristen thought her father seemed to be looking forward to it as if it were a test of manhood. And she vaguely remembered from her childhood the time when the king's retainers from the valley set off on a campaign against Duke Eirik. Now she thought that her father seemed eager for his death in the same way he had been eager for battle and adventure back then. And I thought, what a way to go, man.
Yeah, that's how I want to be.
Yeah, bring it. I can't wait. I believe I'm ready to take it on because this is what it takes. I do not have that attitude.
Yep. Wow.
And of course, that's a medieval soldier's man's attitude, but it's praiseworthy. It's the strength of those who believe won't lose their sight of salvation. You know, he knows it's going to be tough, but I can do it.
Yeah.
The Lord, basically.
Yep. It's great stuff. And even, you know, I have some right after that where mm-hmm. just as one day she said she thought her father had endured so many trials in this life that surely he would be spared from the worst of them in the next. Lavrans replied that it didn't seem that way to him. He had been a rich man. He was descended from splendid lineage, and he had won friends and prosperity in the world. My greatest sorrows were that I never saw my mother's face, and that I lost my children, but soon they will no longer be sorrows. And the same is true of other things that have grieved me in my life. They are no longer sorrows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, imagine feeling that way and not fearful, you know? That's right. That's a great way to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's what we should all work toward. And also, you know, how that affects the people around you, too.
Right.
You know, it's kind of relieving them of some things, too.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Beautiful.
No, I love it.
You bet. Me, too. So, yeah. So then we lose Lavrans. And yep. then shortly after, his wife. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a beautiful touch, too, where, you know, she didn't want to live much longer than him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that she was clamoring to stay there, you know. She wasn't killing herself, but she wasn't overly concerned, you know, and trying to live long. That was it. She just didn't want to be there without him.
Yeah, she was at peace, though.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, so then, you know, once they finally pass away, then we're at the part that we were talking about where, you know, Erland gets arrested. And, you know, there's some things there, you know, they're fighting. Kristen and him are not getting along.
Mm-hmm.
And then he gets arrested and that kind of changes everything. It's like, it kind of rekindles everything in a way. And, you know, we're in spoiler territory. So let me just say how surprised I was that he lived. I couldn't believe it. I was like, no way. Are you kidding me?
I know. You wrote to me and said, Erland is still with us. I'm really surprised. I
can't believe it. Yeah, so there he is. Well, good for him. Yeah. But what a thing, you know. And then, you know, all these people kind of came to his defense. And, yeah, it was like the book kind of had this tonal change. And now we're reading another kind of thing, it felt like to me. And I liked it, you know. I really mm-hmm. did. And, you know, he's just, you know, off in prison. And that's when we see Kristen, you know, leave her kids, and she had one that was at her breast, and she was just like, well, you know, this should be okay. You know, and it talks about her yeah. in this city, who knows how many miles away, you know, with her breasts full and mm-hmm. missing her kids and stuff. And it's like, my goodness, what's going on? So yeah, then, you know, they were so resigned to his death. You know, there was a scene with Kristen and, oh, that was an interesting thing. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Gote or something? Gout? Oh,
I thought it was like Gote.
Okay.
The third kid, the one who seemed simple for a while yeah. and then everything caught up. Yeah.
Right. And he was, you know, on the day that his dad was arrested, his dad gave him a bunch of letters and said, go bring him to this person. But if this person is not there, then you need to do this, you know, burn them. And so he did that, you know, so he gave his kid a very dangerous thing to do. Because these letters were very important.
Right.
So that was something. And then, you know, yeah. And, you know, all of her kids. I mean, there was a scene where Kristen was sitting there. It was like everyone is positive that he's going to be put to death. Yeah. And she's got her three oldest sons there. And they're walking back. And she's got her arm around him and things. As they walk, and you know, it was like kind of the first time we felt that, you know, in the whole book, the family together, and she's like right. showing affection to the boys and feeling with them, I guess is the right way to say it, and mm-hmm. You know, walking along back to their house, and then he survives. Yeah, who'd have thunk it?
I know.
Yeah,
and this is Simon. And that's when Simon is looking at the way they're reacting to each other being in the room together. Mm-hmm. And he can't believe it. It's kind of like he just can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause suddenly he's really weary of it. It's all. And he's, he doesn't like anybody who's there, but then he says, Erland was growing more and more like the man he'd always been, brash and impetuous. Now he had taken Kristen's hand and placed it on his knee. He was sitting there playing with her fingers, and they sat close together so their shoulders touched. Now she blushed bright red. She couldn't take her eyes off him. When he put his arm around her waist, her lips trembled, and she had trouble keeping them closed. And so, to me, and I think, believe also to Simon, and this is what's annoying him so much, of course, but they always are just all in all for each other.
Yeah.
Everything else around them is okay, but this is what keeps them coming back to each other. They're just infatuated with each other.
They're strongly attracted. The time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's okay. I mean, they're married and everything, but it's, I don't know. It's just interesting that that is the driving force for each of them.
Yeah, it really is. You know, and then it ends with, you know, they're celebrating a little bit, and Erland says something. Yeah, if I had been executed, you might have been able to marry her, or you would marry her, or something like
marry
that.
Marry my widow. You'd take my widow.
Right. And then Simon just smacks that cup right out of his hand, and is just like, dude, you know, yeah, that was something, you know. And then Erland apologized and realized, you know, hey, I haven't forgotten that you stole Kristen from me. You know, it's like it was a completely insensitive thing to say. And plus the feelings that were there, you know. So I'm assuming now Erland is sure that, you know, he still loves Kristen, you know. So that might come
he
up
knows
again
now.
Too. Yep.
That's when he says, where are you going, to Simon? And Simon says, I'm going to find another inn. And he goes, well, you don't have to go. And he goes, you don't think I'd stay here now, do you? And that's when the door opens and Kristen goes, Erland, hurry up, basically. Yep. And Simon's like, I have to leave.
I am so leaving right now. Goodbye. Yeah. That's
something. And
Simon was, you know, instrumental in getting him released.
Yeah, but Erland is an idiot.
Right.
I mean, he's not an idiot, but he's, as you say, he's so impetuous, and he just doesn't pay attention to people. Mm-hmm. He doesn't pick up on clues that other, and you can't even say just like it's a man thing. It's not a man thing. Other men around him are going, didn't you know what your father-in-law's like? Don't you see what's happening here? Don't you understand this? Look over there. Mm-hmm. He's standing there going, I didn't know that. But, you know, you meet these people who are, I mean, or maybe you don't meet them. You see them on TV or whatever, and they're superb athletes, or they're superb, so focused on everything else around them that they're just not made to pay attention to the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's what makes a good soldier in this case.
Hmm.
Not necessarily a good leader.
Yeah.
Other people have to do the thinking.
Right, right.
But it's what makes him the linebacker who everyone's like, man, this guy, right?
Yeah.
He's so admirable, or I don't know. Maybe it's a bad example.
No, that's a good example. Yeah. Lawrence was the linebacker or the quarterback, right?
No, Lawrence was the quarterback for sure. Right. He had the brains. Mm-hmm. Well, and I did like the point when he is thinking about Kristen, and this is when he is turning away that other woman at the very beginning of when he's encountered her, and said, you know what? The only time I ever really paid attention to Kristen was when I was seducing her.
Hmm.
And I was trying to win her love. And he goes, and here she is, and I've seduced her and made her, brought her low by the way I taught her to, you know, to be with me and everything. And he's talking about as a maiden. And he goes, but she's had these children. She still stands there good and true because you cannot hide what's really inside her.
Hmm.
And of course, Kristen, we know, is also fighting her fight to try and fight sin and be a better person.
Hmm.
So at that point, he's able to see that, and it gives him the strength to say, I want to be this way to her now that she's good, not now that I'm just trying to win her.
Yeah.
And so they do inspire each other in different ways, and he is capable of having deeper thought and reaching those conclusions. He just doesn't do it very often.
Hmm.
he's probably not called upon to.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people just go to work in the steel mill, have a drink with your friends, and go home. I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
He's kind of that guy.
He is. That's right. Yeah, I'm just, you know, thinking about, you know, relationship with God being similar, right? Mm. It's like, you know, when you're converted, you know, there's a conversion, even if you're Catholic your whole life, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have this conversion, you know, it's like, yeah, it's almost like deciding every day I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
Right. But then, but yeah, it's like, and then when in life, you know, when things are not going well, reaching out towards God is the natural thing to do. And then when things are going well, not doing that.
You forget about it.
It's probably a natural thing to do, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's something that we should strive not to do.
Yeah, that's been one of my fights during Lent so far is one of them was to, I'd gradually fallen away from any time of afternoon prayer. And I'm lucky because of my schedule, I could usually do 20 minutes in the afternoon. And I was doing it and everything. And then for a couple of days in a row, I was like, this is the time before when I'd be playing Baldur's Gate 3 with my cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just did that instead, you know, and I did it for a day or two and I went, this is Lent, man.
Yeah.
Get it together. And this is 20 minutes out of your day. And that's an extremely minor version of that. But these are the little struggles that we fight with all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when we've got something going wrong, you know, we're praying a lot, you know.
Yeah. You're kissing his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Hugging his knees. Please, please don't leave me. I'm right here. What's going on?
Yeah.
Help me.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's the good times when we just want to go off and have a good time. Then we're Orlando. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I can't believe I just said that.
Yeah.
That's the worst. But it is true. You're mm-hmm. right.
Yeah, so, and so it's the same with our relationships, you know. We need to care for them better. Yeah, this book actually teaches you that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Because it really is, like you said at the beginning, you know, about marriage. there's some things I could do better.
Yeah, well.
Yep.
Same, and same for all of us, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah.
You know, you have those moments when you come together as a couple, and then, of course, everything gets good, and you kind of, it's not that you treat each other badly, but you just slide away into older habits or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the relationship with God. It's training for the relationship with God.
Interesting. You know? Yep.
And we see them doing this over and over.
Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Yeah. And this book, I never really would have thought of it because I hadn't really remembered the book well enough in all the things it's talking about and pointing out. But, so good for Lent.
It absolutely is. You know, yeah, Kristen, you know, just her thoughts alone. I mean, it's a meditation on sin and its effects, you know, in a way, you know, she thinks about it all the time and she's wrong in some of her thoughts, you know, again, like this is going to affect my baby or if my baby has a defect of some type, that's why, you know, we know that's not true. But it's a deep contemplation about these things. And, you know, we're told, you know, that, you know, when we sin, it's not a private thing. It actually, you know, it's ripples in a pond and other people are being affected by those ripples, whether it's obvious or not obvious. And, that's this whole book is full of that.
Being wrapped up in a really engrossing story.
Yeah. And it's, again, I said this last time, but, you know, for us to just say what happened would actually only take 10 minutes, you know? But it's compelling the entire way, you know, it was 400 pages we read this time and, you know, I'd sit down and I'd say, yeah, I need to get some of this done, you know? And then I'd just read, I'm just in there. It's just like, it's really good. You know, I'm completely in there. I'm caring about everything. Poor Erland is what I was thinking. Through all the stuff he did, he's about to die, for heaven's sake. Yeah. And then he lived. I was joyous.
Okay, good. I was like, and how did you feel when he lived?
Felt it, you know, it's just like you feel, you know, you're so deep. That's one thing about long books, right? You're really in there. with a good long book. I mean, yeah, there's all kinds of details. You know, sometimes the author is talking about, you know, this is what she's doing to clean the place.
Right.
This is what's happening with the kid. You know, the kid needs change. You know, we're going to talk about that for a second. We're going to talk about how breastfeeding feels. We're going to talk about what birth felt like. You know, and it's just this life, and there's so much there, and it's never dull. It's always compelling is the word that I keep using. It's very good.
I'm so glad you like it, and I have a new appreciation for it. As I say, reading through it to talk to you, especially in these single books, is really focusing me.
Yeah.
And considering, I guess I read it, like I said, I read it 1.5 times before.
So
this is a different way to read it. And that's why I was thinking, you know, definitely good for Lent or any time, really. But when you're wanting to focus on stuff, this stuff really kind of pops out in a way that is beneficial to the reader.
I think so, too.
As well as to the characters. And I will say, because for me, I looked at, we were having to read this in pretty quickly, all these pages. And so at the end of the month, we're going to be recording again. And I was like, okay, how many pages am I looking at? How many days do I have? How many pages a day do I have? And with this book, some books I'll go, oh, there's that post-it sticking up. Okay, I can get there. I can do it. But this book, I'm often getting to the post-it and going, well, I better finish this section. Well, there's another section. I better. And I keep reading.
Right.
You know, I get done early in the month or whenever the schedule. It's just compelling.
Doing the same.
Yeah.
Terrific. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
And now the next section is called The Cross. And again, I just can't imagine what was coming up that we need to call that The Cross.
I don't know if anybody could imagine it their first time through. I'm thinking about what happens, and I'm just like, okay, it's now making perfect sense to me thinking through it again. But wow.
Wow. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to it.
I know. Going to be good.
That is great. Okay. All right. But next up for us is not another episode of Kristen. It's an episode of Thelma.
Oh, yeah.
And what is Thelma?
Thelma is a movie from last year, and it's about Thelma is a grandmother, which Thelma was my grandmother's name, surprisingly.
Oh, nice.
And we didn't call them, you know, Grandma and Grandpa. It was Raymond and Thelma. They were very modern and progressive for their times.
Very nice.
But anyway, she basically, the short story is, she gets scammed by somebody who calls and says her grandson has had a car accident and she needs to send all this money for a lawyer and then finds out it's not true and says, forget that. I found this envelope I was using to send it and I just got the address on it and I'm going to go get this guy.
Ooh, wow.
And she recruits a friend of hers who's played by Richard Roundtree. It's his last role.
Okay.
And from the nursing home that he's in, and they go after it.
Wow. All right.
So it's a small movie. It's one of those little movies, but it's saying something good. I mean, and on several levels.
Oh, good.
We were surprised when we watched it last year, so I just thought you would really like it.
Fun. I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be great.
And also, it's funny without being corny in the way that people are about old people sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like the old people jokes.
Yeah.
It's not that stuff.
Oh, good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, great. Fun. Yeah. Okay.
So, refreshing.
Love it. Love it. Okay. All right. And then right after that, we'll talk about Kristen and one more time.
Yep.
So looking very much forward to that too. So, all right.
You got a good month ahead.
You bet. Okay. Well, thanks everybody for listening, everyone.
Yeah. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.